Blog Talk Radio.
Hello world, happy Monday. This is Gray Eye Smith and you're listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Lee Wildove. Unfortunately, Lee Wildove is under the weather and won't be able to host the show. These shows are brought to you by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets, and we have anthologies available on amazon.com that help support these shows filled with poetry from around the world, so please feel free to check that out. And that said, tonight's show is based on a contest that V. Wild Dove and myself ran, and it was a dust of, I'm sorry, hold on one second, let me grab it here. It was called a, sorry, I'm having trouble finding it here. There we go. Winter Dust of Snow, Memory Quote by Robert Frost. And the quote goes, "Dust of snow, the way a crow shook down on me, the dust of snow from a hemlock tree, has given my heart a change of mood and saved some part of a day that I had rued," by Robert Frost. So that's the gist of tonight's show, plus a few carryovers from the last show, and a bit of open poetry as well. So I'm glad you could join us, and I'm going to grab the first poem here. Oops, put that on the board. Okay. There we go. Okay, so we have callers on hold. Awesome. Hello, and welcome to the show, Naomi.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Good, good, good. Not too cold up there?
No, it was plus 7 today, so it wasn't too bad at all.
Oh, wow. Wow, warmer than here.
Yeah, it was breezy. We got minus 19 or something.
Yeah, pardon me?
You're in the minus right now on the old thermostat.
Yeah, minus 18 right now, and it's supposed to get colder tomorrow. They're announcing like a real cold wave coming in, so we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you for calling in, Naomi. I'm going to grab the next caller. Hello, and welcome to the show, Do You Wild Dove?
Hey, Gray. Hey, Naomi. Hey, everybody. I don't know. Are you guys the only one right now? Hi, I see
so far,
Frank
yeah.
there and Phil and Robbie.
Yeah. Well, we have one more caller to bring on.
Okay.
There you go. 667. Who's calling, please?
This is Martha.
Hi, Martha. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Martha.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi, Martha.
So good to hear
Hi,
you.
Everybody.
Hi, sweetie.
Hi.
And, so welcome to the show, everybody. I'm glad you can call in and share your time. Okay, so I think I posted the first link. Yeah, I did. Would you mind reading this for me, please? It's by Blue Wright, Naomi. I'm going to post it again here.
Me? Did you say me?
Yes.
He surely did.
Okay. Oh, okay. Humane. Oh, lovely fawn, the Titan gifted you freedom, destined to seek blooming gardens, content and peace elements made. He loved you so in silence and final embraces swift, gave not me the same anguish and anger's ache, curious and defiant, but demur not made. We who rule to fall rises that quench not. What myriad paintings your deep-wrenching eyes did paint, he gave me as creator's quill, strokes mortal woven in colors. Your love chained within dances in your elegant heel. Burdens of thought do you carry like humans cursed. Fences that you respect make me leap beyond. Dreams give me wings, reasons to oar ahead. When shredded in smog of failures, the weight of my dreams doth drown me so, desire a ban to bear. Is that why I see pity with indifference on thine divine eyes, O lovely being? Why are we christened humane when you are more so? Is the question that seeks me more so with every added day? End poem.
Beautiful reads, Naomi. But, you know, this is a deep poem, a philosophical poem full of deep thought and powerfully penned throughout. It had a beautiful rhythm and cadence to it as well. What did you think of you?
Well, I think Naomi did a fantastic job in reading this. I really enjoyed her reading this because it just kind of just gave it more of an actual lifelike of what we see, you know, so many times in life, you know, with especially depending on your background and your family's traditions and stuff like that, where that, you know, we look to the animals and they learn to live in nature. And as people of Native American, African American, by watching even the Celtics, the Irish, you know, by watching what was going on with the animals, they learned to live. They learned to live with the animals. They learned to watch what the animals did, and they learned to imitate what the animals did. And, you know, I just thought it was really, you know, funny how, you know, they used to rule the lands. Now we're destroying everything. I really like that stanza because that's what it really made me think of this, you know, curious and defiant, but demure not made. We who rule to fall, rises that quench not, you know. I've been watching a series on Egyptians and how they wanted to be worshipped forever, and, you know, it just shows how fragile human life is. And animal life is. Excellent read, Naomi. And this is an excellent poem because it just made me think. I like poems that make me think.
Great comment. Thank you, Lee. And Martha, what did you think? Hello, Martha?
Martha?
I thought it was great. I love the imagery and the word pictures. It was just really good, and it's got a powerful message in it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Thank you, Martha. Great comment. Okay, so I'm going to go to the next poem, and if you wouldn't mind, when you see it, please leave.
Okay.
There we go.
Ready? And this is written by David Meyerhoff, and his poem is titled Whisper of the Other. Like a car all revved up, the slowing into park mode, the mind-body interface gassed up for the daily grind of grunt, punt, and hunt. Now in rest mode, whether a Ferrari or beetle, head rests on the pillow of quiet, beckoning the weary to blithe and eternal perfection. Now, thoughts moving like molasses, sentences whispered in slow-mo, pulse in muted tones of thump, tendons humming rhythm, muscles soaking in the bath of silence. Like the starship nestled in between dimensions, the words now rearranged in the sporific brain, whispering the messages of grasped syllables, you did good. Good night. End poem.
Beautiful read. Beautiful read, Lee. And, you know, this is an interesting poem about your daily life and how, you know, like you're like a car all revved up and then slowly into park mode, mind-body interface, gassed up for the daily grind, grunt, pant, and hunt, now in rest mode, whether a Ferrari or a Beetle. You know, when you get to finish your day and you just instantly relax when you hit your car, you know, that's a beautiful description of life and its daily grind, in my opinion. What did you think, Naomi?
Oh, yeah, this is so clever. brilliantly written, and you know, just the extended metaphor here of the car to represent, you know, all the things that goes on in a day, you know, with you're revved up, and then you go into park mode, and then you just rest, and you know, you just leave life soak in, and nestled in between dimensions, the words now rearranged in the sephoric brain, whispering the message of the grafted syllables. You did good. Good night. Yeah, that's really neat, you know, the way he worded the whole thing. Just bravo.
Wonderful comment, Naomi. Thank you. And Martha, what did you think?
I really liked it. I thought it was great metaphor using the car, and it was wonderful the way they carried it through. Kind of gave me a chuckle at the end, and I thought it was a unique write. Very well done.
Thank you, Martha. And Lou, what did you think?
Well, I really, really liked this poem because it reminded me of when I used to travel a lot, and you know, and it doesn't matter if you're in a Ferrari or if you're in a beetle bug, you know, when you finally pull over for that time to rest, where, you know, because I did go and look to see what he wrote this for, and it was Sleep Whispers. And in here, when I read that, it made me realize what he was talking about, you know, that long drive, your head rests on the side of the window when you finally, just out of exhaustion, just pull over. And your mind slows down. And I really like this where he says, sentences whispered in slow-mo, you know, the thumbs, the rhythm, and, you know, when you finally, you know, get to your destination or drove as far as you could, and you pat yourself on the back and you take a couple of winks, good night. You know, that is the good sleep. I don't recommend sleeping in your car anymore because, of course, that's not safe anymore, but, you know, there was a time when we all used to do that, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Leah. Okay, Martha, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay, let me go get it here.
Before you go, I'd like to welcome Bobby to the show. Hello, Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
Hello.
Hi, Bobby. Hey, Captain.
It's Tom.
Oh, it's Tom. Well, you don't sound like Bobby.
No.
Hey, Tom.
I looked too deep.
Whoops. But it says Bobby's on hold.
And I just don't have that level of that magical laughing energy. I acknowledge that.
Thank you, Tom, for calling in. Leah, can you go to the studio and see if Bobby's there as well?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Don't. I'm on my telephone. I'm not on my computer. I can't open another window without closing. Sorry.
Okay. Bill, if you're listening, could you please bring Bobby on? So that said,
I can pick up people. If you want me to, I can pick up people, but I'm going to have to hang up.
Bobby's on the line. Hello, Bobby.
Hello.
Oh, there she is. Thank you, Phil. Hey, Bobby.
Hello.
For a second there, all of a sudden we heard go this man's voice. I go, that's not Bobby.
Nah.
Welcome, Tom. Welcome, Bobby.
I was wondering what the confusion was.
Well, I appreciate you both calling in. The 703 group is here.
We're going to have to start color coding us or something.
Right. Well, thank you both for calling in. Martha, would you mind reading for me, please?
Sure. Braving the Odds by Edmund Ogden Onyema. Sundered by the clothes strewn here and there, and then do foraging ants, yet regroup. Wending through the trails, keen on the quest, eyes on the born now, and then the dung beetle falls flat. Where the fawn is back, limbs a sprawl. When the dung rolls back again and again, he yet bounces back. Maintains, mountains may daunt, and slopes may scare. But scaring up grit like the bear, that grit they bear when they hunt for salt. The ibex still slog to reach the treasures that leech. Stumbles and falls may canker the race, but embracing the fall is what kills the race. For grasses that defy the blades of the scythe, and from gritty pith regrow, shall with lush blades ever bloom. End poem.
Yeah, it was a perfect read, and it's a fascinating storyline to this, you know, of life of an ant, you know, metaphor, I think, for life of man, and how many fall and canker the race. But it was just a powerful little write. What did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, this is wonderful, the way he takes the ants there. And, you know, the resilience and, you know, just compares them like to the bear, although they're small. It's not the ants, it's the beetle, sorry. he just compares them, you know, to a larger thing, although they're really tiny. And, you know, they're up to conquer, you know, life and go on and just be resilient and just push through, you know. So this is very powerful, this little write, and just brilliantly written. So great job on this.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And Lou, what did you think?
Well, I totally agree with Naomi. What I liked about this, it was kind of like watching the Nature Channel. But what I liked about this is because, you know, I'm sorry, but I watch bugs, ants, it doesn't matter, butterflies, bees, doesn't matter, animals too, it doesn't matter. But I got a big kick out of where Martha started talking about that dung beetle him laying flat. That just, you know, that brought out the child in me, my child, because it just made me, I could visually see it. And I'm just wondering if you know, what he's doing is that he's taking a Sith, and it sounds like he's out there cutting the blades and he's looking at the wildlife that's around him, and maybe part of his imagination was going at the same time too. I don't know, because I don't think he'd be out there cutting grass if there's a bear roaming around. Well, I wouldn't be
right
out there roaming around.
No, not many would, but there are a few crazy few that would, I think. What did you think, Tom?
Well, to me, I hear a series of metaphors, natural, using nature to speak to how much we strive for our goals, and even when we fail, we keep striving, and that is this willingness to, you know, deal with the world and deal with all the problems, and yet keep searching for what we're looking for. That, as he says in the last sentence, for the grasses that defy the blade of the scythe. I think the important word there is the defy. And from gritty piss regrow, shall with lush blades ever bloom. The idea being, you know, that you got to go with the flow. You got to accept the fact that you can't always win. And at the same time, that is how you make things become beautiful, because you don't quit. That was rather a lovely little piece.
Well said. Thank you, Tom. And Bobby, what did you think?
It sort of reminded me of a take on one of Aesop's fables, the ants and the grasshopper, where the grasshopper comes to the ants and is begging for food, and the ants looked at him and said, what were you doing all summer long? Weren't you preparing for winter? And the grasshopper says, no, I was making music. And so the ant says, hey, tough shit, that, you know, very well, now dance. And they turned their back on the grasshopper. And it just, it reminded me of that, because here's the ant just laboring away and making sure that things are taken care of, as opposed to just letting things go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Martha, what did you think of the rewrite that you read?
I thought it was a wonderful comparison to the tenacity of the insects, how they keep going no matter what's in their way. And we human beings can be the same way. We just keep trying no matter what slows us down or gets in the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Thank you, Martha. Okay, Thomas, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, I'm glad to. Somber souls weep within forest gates of cemetery decay. By Vibrant Oddities. Cemetery, right, behold lantern canvas searcher between the speaking caskets. Be calm with radiance. Bridge, voyager, blue, golden motherland, green with the golden certainty as rose souls bloom softly. Hidden from the pilots that damage our forest pages into garden bleakness, cry within cave wall, somber souls weep within forest gates. Coyotes kiss oak wood into silence. Their curiosity is peaceful. Feel this branch over decayed bones. Alone the deadly day remains. Strange corpses are climbing. Cemetery bubbling with corpses vocal. Bloom dandelions and daffodils, a reminder of natality, sweetly. Bold the streets shiver and shake, evening skeletons, somber souls embrace, a struggle from canvas ill. Tendrils of sacrifice resurfaces and plagues us with manic nightmare near, coyotes cry so softly. In decay, cemetery becomes more quiet in distance. Away from shackled humanity, the forest revives. If only her bright branches may behold answer from the lashing boulders of monarchs and senators, her somber soul in cemetery reflects bleeding frustration. Will humanity learn or burn under monstrosity? End poem.
Wonderful read, Thomas. And in the author's notes, they say, darkness revels herself in night. In the night, as a voyager beside coyotes in the reflection of cemetery misery. Oddity makes falls with somber souls her reflection, seeking answers beside bleak coyotes and skeletons brittle. The moon becomes more fearful of her future. What is it that you see in these gates? So, yeah, I mean, she painted the cemetery scene beautifully. It's dark and enchanting and full of fear and ominous energy. But, yeah, just a wonderful write, very engaging. What did you think, Naomi?
This is very, this is so powerful that it's so deep and philosophical, has that question at the end there, will humanity learn or burn under monstrosity? And the way he used the cemetery scene and the life, you know, the cemetery with the death there and with the bubbling, yet the bubbling greenness and forestry and the plants and the new life that is bubbling around it, you know, coming to life, that against the what cemetery represents, death, is amazing. It's brilliant and clever, you know, the way he used those two and juxtaposed them against each other here, and beautifully written and superb imagery throughout this. It's just an amazing write here. So bravo.
Thank you, Naomi. And Lou, what are your thoughts? Hello, do you unmute? We can't hear you. Oh, she got away. Martha, what did you think?
She got dropped, she wrote.
Yeah. Martha, what did you think?
I thought it was really good. I love the imagery and the use of the cemetery and the life that's still there. And I thought it was really great how the end used that to bring home a powerful point.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Martha. And Bobby, what did you think?
I agree with Naomi. It has a very gothic flavor to it. It's very dark, right? Very deeply philosophical. It's a very layered write. It's dense with metaphor. It's one of those writes that I would have to sit down and read aloud to myself slowly 3 or 4 times to really be able to grasp the storytelling here, because it's a very the author has given us a very complex story here, very grim, but very deeply philosophical, and yet it has some light in it. I mean, look at the first line, cemetery bright, behold lanterns, canvas searcher, between the speaking caskets, be calm with radiance. And then again it says, golden certainty as rose souls bloom softly. It has a darkness, but it also has its moment of light, too. And so, it says natality sweetly and soft, coyotes cry softly. It is a complex write. Like I said, I have to really sit down and read it very slowly to myself to really be able to fully appreciate what the author has given us here, because it's a very complex piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful comment. Thank you. And Thomas, what did you think? Good night, Martha.
I have to go along with our previous speaker because she's right. There's a great deal of depth in this. You have the symbology of the cemetery, coyotes, and this sense of life's renewal in things like if only her bright branches may behold answers from the lashing boulders of monarchs and senators. It's kind of got a gothic feel to it, a sense of the impending doom of death, but at the same time, there's a resilience in here, a sense of recognizing our own humanity in here. I'm with her. I'd have to read it several times if I could give you a full idea of what it how it spoke to me.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much, Thomas. And Bobby, would you mind reading for me next, please?
When do I ever mind? What have we got here? We've got A Winter Beach by Linda M.B. All right, pulling it up here. We've got Winter's Beach. Oops.
Bobby?
Somebody dropped. Something fell apart.
Probably her phone dropped too.
Yeah, must have. Yeah, she did. I'd like to welcome Sawa to the show. Hello, Sawa.
Hello,
hi, Sawa.
Hi, Sawa.
Hi. How are you, everyone?
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you. I can't speak. Sorry. Oh my goodness. Oh, what happened to Bobby?
Can she call back to read, or?
Yeah, she said I dropped.
And she may have called back or calling back.
She's back.
Okay. Hi, Bobby. Oh, she's not on yet.
I don't hear her.
No, Bill will have to bring her on because I can only see so many callers on the studio, and unfortunately, I'm maxed out. So, Phil, if you might mind, please bring Bobby on.
Yeah, that's the way it goes, isn't it?
And,
you're supposed to do.
Yeah, stand on the corner with some
do, and then you got to put some punch in it. Do.
So funny.
Did she get picked up yet? Let me see if I can pick her up. Bobby? Do you want me to hang up and see if I can pick her up? But I'm going to have to. I can hang out in the group.
No. Hello? We can get Sawa to read.
Okay.
It's
Winter's Beach by Linda.
Okay, by Linda M.B. Winter Beach. No swimmers are about the suction waves that tumble, bring their icy chill. Batted and tepid sun, we perch in dunes, with by sand, cheeks reddened, and watch the ocean spill, float and bubble up into Winter Beach. Cigars are all gone, to secret hideaways. I miss the flash of yellow eyes and greedy claret beaks. Their shrill falsetto mewing in the pungent, salty air, exhausted bodies of trees. Gray-headed, mitten birds lie prone too far beyond our feet, fated ones too weak to make the 8-week journey. From Alaska back for breeding, we used to try to save them, but now move them to grassy shelter spot and let them go when 30 summers come. Tiny beaches remain will wash away into the ocean's care. On this wide and windy winter beach, we sit numb by cold and motionless as mutant birds in death and deform.
Wow, beautiful read, Sawa. But what an ending to that thing. You got all this wonderful scenery and then exhausted bodies of three gray-headed mutton birds lie prone not far out our feet. Batted ones too weak to make the 8-week journey from Alaska for breeding. We used to save them, but now move them to a grassy sheltered spot and let them go when sultry summer comes. Tiny bleached remains will wash away into the ocean's care. On this wild and windy winter beach, we sit numbed by cold and motionless as mutton birds in death. It is a haunting ending to that. Beautifully written, though. What did you think, Naomi?
Was it me or Lulu?
No, she
no,
said you.
You.
Me? Okay.
Yeah, you.
Yeah, this is a wonderful piece. Oh, my gracious. She just captured so vividly winter in you know, in the fall, late fall and winter time. Oh, my gracious. This is just such a brilliant, right? And you know, there's a deep philosophical question that lies within these lines. You know, where, when to fight and when just to let go. And you know, when you see that with the bird there, you know, that you just don't just let it, nature take its course. Just let life take its course. Just let things go, you know, when to fight and when to stop. And this is just, you know, just such a beautiful, beautiful, right? I mean, the imagery in here, the wording, it's just, I have no words for this. This is just amazing, amazing, right?
Beautiful comment, Naomi. Thank you. And Lee, what did you think? Hello, Lee. Oh,
she's
we lost
on mute?
Her too. No,
oh
we
goodness.
Lost her.
You're just throwing people to the wind.
Right?
Oh,
I think Bobby's back though. Bobby, are you back?
Hey La, she's back.
Hi-yo.
Thomas, what did you think of that last rite?
I love it. I love the feeling that, you know, this life continues and we might try to save and rescue bits and pieces of it, but they really don't have any effect on the grand plan as much as it is our job to just accept, be present to it, and let it move on. There's a certain grandeur in this brief little piece that is just stunning.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. And Salwa, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree with everyone. It's just fabulous, really. Just something about the sea and the salt and the feeding. She brings the feeding even in the winter. In the pungent, salty air, exhausted bodies of three gray-headed mutant birds lie prone not far beyond our feet, fated ones too weak to make the eight-week journey. I love how she actually took care of them. What a beautiful heart to save them and then let them go again in the summer. Really, this has moved me deeply. And also, like the way just her vivid description, as Naomi said, just like grasp you. So beautiful, the very meticulous details. I miss the flash of yellow eyes and greedy characters. Greedy for the food. They could just come after the food. So I love this one. Really beautifully done.
Well said. Thank you, Tawa. And Bobby, did you get a chance to hear the poem?
I did. It has a, like Thomas said, it has a feeling of the cycle of life to it. The comings and goings of the small creatures living and expiring, just everything goes on around them. But it's a beautifully atmospheric rite, very metaphor rich, very beautifully done.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Liu, did you get a chance to hear the poem?
Which poem are you talking about? Because I don't know.
The one that's out of
it. No, I was on the other line looking to see who somebody was on hold, but I hung up and came back. Thank you for picking me up, Phil.
Okay, Bobby.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't hear it.
Thank you. Bobby, would you mind reading the next one, please?
No, only if the gremlins don't kick me off again. I, Maybe I was like some cult. Maybe I was supposed to leave food out them for them or something, and then I forgot, and now they're angry with me. An obedient heart. Oh boy, all five lines. An obedient heart by Lewis Kalinzi. Solomon asked for wisdom so that he could rule with insight. I ask for an obedient heart so that I can move on the path of your light. End poem.
Beautiful. Were you reading his author's note?
Yes. The author's note says, he asked for wisdom, but he fell. Moses was obedient. He is in heaven.
Thank you, Bobby. Yeah, so this is definitely a very scriptural, right? You know, it speaks of Solomon asking for wisdom so that he could rule with insight. And then he goes on to ask for an obedient heart so that he can move into the path of his light. You're just a wonderful, thought-provoking, right? Well read, Bobby. Thank you. And Naomi, what are your thoughts on the poem?
This is very spiritual. You know, comparing Solomon to oneself, I think here he doesn't mention Moses, but I think he says, I asked for an obedient heart so he can follow the path of God here. Just follow the path of your light, which is God's light, you know, his wisdom, his way, you know, moving that that Christian way. So I just think this was an amazing little brevity here on spirituality. So thank you very much for Louis Calizzi for this wonderful little brevity here.
Thank you, Naomi. Great comment. And Louis, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, this is just like, you know, it's a, what I would call a common sense poem. What is the use of asking for something as such as wisdom and for you not to use it and behave? Well, obviously, you know, you look at his life, Solomon's life, and the tragedy that he brought upon himself with his behavior and not listening. So wisdom doesn't do anybody good unless you imply it in your life. And that is the whole point. You know, the same thing with, you know, Moses. You know, he wanted to make God happy. So even though he was getting the wisdom from him, he obediently applied it, whereas Solomon didn't. Good read, Bobby. Good brevity.
Well said. Thank you, Leah. And Tom, what are your thoughts?
I don't know if there's much I could add. It is a very spiritual rite, and there's a great deal of understanding and insight in this. It's hard to be someone who is in a position of strong leadership to recognize that they must temper all things they do with recognizing that they still are only human, and there are far wiser and greater beings than them. And to understand this and to accept this is a gift that not everyone can achieve. Well said.
Great comment. Thank you, Tom. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to take a pass on this one.
Okay. And Sawa, what do you think?
Really beautiful reminder. I agree with Louis, and I believe that God sent us the prophets to really learn from them. Even they are human, they make mistakes. So really it's a sign for us to learn from them and find your own path to the light. Really beautiful reminder.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you, Sawa. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's by Mirabal 7. It's called Home 2.0. You bore holes into me. Make your hollows clean hollow. Halo. To uncover something you aren't afraid to see. An archaeologist discovering neoliths buried among my bones, claiming dust and pebbles and relic, licking grime off my lips. Your smile cuts me open and stitches me up, bracing me for the next one. I cannot help but find myself suffused with every shade of you. An acral craving stems in my chest, fingers longing to trace words. My mouth refuses form in your presence. Over the skin encasing your heart, an organ I wish to mirror and learn in slivers. Let me lie and say I've been written for you, as if thought someone could have seen coming, that I exist in your typewriter sentences. I am a character, and this is but your world. There's no greater joy than in the belief that you've rendered me awake. I mean alive. A new dream plays into my pillow. Quixotic fantasy imagined by you. Wind to my willow. Willow to my body. And that's part two of a series of poems that he did. But no, this is a beautiful poem filled with fantastic imagery and the thought of, you know, being so entwined in somebody that you are a piece of them and they are a piece of you. I thought it was wonderful. What did you think, Naomi?
This is amazing, Ray. You know, just your smile cuts me open and stitches me up, bracing me for the next one. I cannot help but find myself suffused with every shade of you. This is, you know, the language used in this is just amazing. And your heart, an organ, I wish to mirror and learn in slivers. Just amazing. Just amazing all the way down. Just, you know, brilliantly written here.
Thank you, Naomi. And Louise, what are your thoughts?
This person is deeply in love with somebody. How many of us do not want that soulmate? You know, to come home and to have this person look at you and just see deeper than what everybody else sees, to see the inner person. You know, she even talks about here, you know, to see like you're an archaeologist discovering neuroliths buried among my bones, claiming dust. You know, everything is important. The pebbles, the relic, the lipping grime off my lips, you know, and, you know, like Naomi was talking about the smile and every shade and encasing their heart and to get to know somebody sliver by sliver, you know, note by note, you know, that is something that we all look for in somebody else. Beautiful, beautiful love poem.
Thank you. That was a wonderful comment, Leah. And Thomas, what are your thoughts?
I can't pat, you know, best Lulu on much of anything there. I think she covered it really beautifully. You know, there's a sense of rebirth to me in this because of the way in which he speaks of being buried and how time has, you know, affected him. So I get this feeling of both, you know, a present love and a love that has been going on since time began. It's pretty interesting piece to listen to. Very, very, very lovely use of words.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Bobby, what do you think?
This is a deeply emotional, very romantic write. And I got is as we fall in love with someone, once we realize our emotional attraction or attachment, there comes a period of revelation and this is what this strikes me as, to uncover something you aren't afraid to see, the relic and licking grime off my lips. Your smile cuts me open and stitches me up. And again, there's that, and I cannot help but find myself suffused with every shade of you, which is a beautiful phrase. And I feel, again, that this sense of revelation that this person has immersed themselves emotionally in the affection of this person. The writer is totally immersed. And what I'm really struck by is the asexuality of this. I mean, it is gender agnostic. This could be a man reading it to a woman reading it to a man, or a same-sex couple feeling it, because it has no gender. It is pure emotion. And I think it is so beautiful because of that.
Hello?
Well, that's a great comment. And Sawa, what are your thoughts?
I agree. It's full of emotion. The first stanza really grasped me. The whole poem is incredible. You bore holes into me. I mean, to bore holes in someone, it's something painful. But in the contrary, here it's like love. And then to uncover something you aren't afraid to see. Usually when you're, a lot of people, when they love, they're afraid. Like they hide their, they don't want to show their imperfection right away because they're afraid that maybe push away the person. Perhaps.
Yeah,
and
they'll be rejected.
And here, the opposite, to uncover something you aren't afraid to see. And Akira's just discovering, you know, it's buried among my bones. Like, it's incredible, the description and the honesty of the wording and the emotion is really captivating.
Well said. Thank you, Sawa. Okay, Thomas, I have your write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, thank you. Let me get there.
Logical.
Okay. This is a logical man. An epigram. Somehow the wondrous promise of the earth is that there are things beautiful in it, things wondrous and alluring. And by virtue of your trade, you want to understand them. Michael Feigenbaum. So, often what delights, enchants, seems to dance just out of reach, like an idea that won't quite resolve, or a woman whose allure fills one's hall. Yet, remains a puzzle, not to be understood. Instead, a flame that boils the blood leaves you beside yourself, unable to function, take command of the situation. You hear her laughter, feel her kiss, die to touch a sense of love. Like a whisper dangles like a last leaf and falls endlessly. How can something so wonderful destroy all sense of peace? You promise yourself not to be unmanned. You go through everything you need to do to stay in control. You won't let her go. She shall become your thrall. When she goes, you will not be one to crawl after her. Somewhere, maybe it is only the song of birds. Maybe it is a brook dashing downhill over rocks. No, you cannot lie. It is laughter, and it call. Such a wonderful song. There are times when you were young and your mother sung a lullaby and you heard in your heart the laughter. Innocence awakens in your heart where shadows have been thick. Is a light. It is warm. You feel her again. She swirls her cloak. The night descends. You cry out. Reach out for her. 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 Emptiness. There is no commanding a ghost. Her fingers stroke your cheek. Oh, thank God. She hasn't left. You will do anything to keep her here. She laughs. End poem.
Well, beautiful read, Thomas. And that's a haunting story of, you know, love and devotion, giving and not being returned. It's a very sad, tragic storyline. But, you know, there is a beauty to the darkness of it. And I found that fascinating. So thank you for sharing. Naomi, would you like to comment?
This is a beautiful, haunting, touching right here, Tom. Somewhere maybe it is only the song of birds. Maybe it is a brook dashing downhill over rocks. No, you cannot lie. It is laughter and it calls. This is such a beautifully heartfelt right here. It just pulls you in and it you know, it just lets you sway to its tenderness all through the lines here. Just bravo, Tom, on this amazing, amazing, brilliant write here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Naomi. And Louis, what are your thoughts?
You know, I really, really like this. I mean, this is what I didn't finish commenting, but I said, you know, amazing, the desperate love of fatality, a drug of midnight that calls again and again, yet the slow death of a razor that cuts us every night. You know, and, you know this person's going to hurt you. You know, you're the faithful one, and they're the tormentor. So excellent, excellent. Excellent poem. I really enjoyed the whole thing, Tom.
Oh, I'm glad the sense of the nemesis came across. I wanted to do it almost as subtly as I could. So, you know, the sense of falling would not disappear in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Lou. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I'm sitting trying to figure out how to start. I really, really enjoyed the read. I enjoy the writing. It's complex. I get a sense of obsession here. Someone falls and they realize after they've fallen into under the spell of this particular person that their every thought is on them, and yet even if it isn't, if it's unrequited, or that the person they're in love with knows that they have this empowerment over them, This individual leaves you beside yourself, unable to function, take command of the situation. You hear her laughter. It feels like obsession. The draw, the pull that this person has toward the writer, and the writer is unable to extricate themselves, and even if they could, it doesn't sound like they want to.
True.
That's a great comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Sawa, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree with everyone. After all these beautiful comments, amazing read, amazing poem, like really masterfully done. Everything is beautiful, and it tells us more from the beginning. So often what delight and chance seem to dance just outreach, like an idea that won't quite resolve. The woman whose allure is one holds, yet remain a puzzle not to be understood, instead of flame that pours the blood. She gave us idea, really, who's this woman from the little bit in the beginning. And your question, how can something so wonderful destroy all sense of peace? It just like you, I agree, like you when you love, sometimes love hurts. It is very, no, not sometimes. They say if love does not hurt, it's not love, right? So, and like you really describe who she is and how you're consistently like still in love with her, like everyone else said. And the ending is so sad, even though it's beautiful, it's just sad. Her thing, really sad when you say reach out for her emptiness. There's no commanding a ghost. Wow. It's just incredible, the whole poem, really. My favorite stanza is Naomi's choice. I really, it's incredible. But our whole thing is amazing.
Well, thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Tyler and Sawa. Okay, Bobby, I have your write up whenever you're ready, please. I'll repost it.
Oh, great. I got to follow this. Something profound to, we've got intellectual bubblegum here. We've got frivolity and frippery. and it's called sugar cookie. All right. If you're a diabetic, turn your volume down. sugar cookie. This was for the dusting of snow, a contest. Dust. No. Frosty flurries fill the air. Powdery white is everywhere. The woods become a pale confection, a wintry icing of sheer perfection. Mother Nature conjures sweets as snow turns the world to sugary treats, as all the boscage displays the freeze, a magic glacé coats the trees. With all the woodlands bedecked in style, I stroll this pâtisserie surroundings a while. Of winter sparkles bright as the snow topping reflects the evening light. A glittering sugary crust covers the ground like silvery draghis sprinkled round. A crow rests on the rooftops, black wings furled, quietly sharing my sugar cookie world.
Wow, that was beautiful. Such a powerful, right? And, you know, the read was fantastic as well.
Thank you.
I really loved your, I really loved the imagery that you paint this picture with. You know, frosty flurries fill the air, powdery white is everywhere, the woods become a pale confection, a wintry icing of sheer perfection. You know, how beautiful is that? Just an amazing opening stanza. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Naomi, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I think it's so clever that you took a sugar cookie and you made it into a metaphor for winter, and you took all its components and you put it into this poem. And it's true, so true, you know, it fitted in so well, the glittering, sugary crust, the magic glacé, and the silvery dragees sprinkled round, and it's just so, I just found this so brilliant, Bobby, the way you composed this whole thing around the cookie, and it made it so beautiful, you know, each line. And then you finished it with the bang there, the crow that rests on the rooftop, and it's sharing your sugar cookie world, which is your winter, you know. And it's so true. You do see those crows all around on the rooftops. I even look out my window and I see them on the electric wires, you know, in front of my house. And they're always around in winter, and they're always there. And, yeah, this is just an amazing, amazing write here, Bobby. Just bravo on this write. Thank you.
Thank you, Naomi.
So
and Thomas, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I, this was a perfect counterpoint. my dark Poe-like take on the way that love can destroy should be filled with the light immediately afterwards of something as delightful as this, with all the laughter and joy that this piece just so beautifully displays. A world of confection, a world where snow is nothing more than powdered sugar to delight guests in every possible way. Beautifully done. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Great comment, Thomas. Thank you. And Sawa, what are your thoughts?
Oh, really, I agree with everyone. So beautiful. It makes me want to go, like, eat some snow right now, not cookies. It's so funny. It really makes you think about how the shape, and make me feel like a Christmas poem in a way in my mind. I don't know why. The shape of the snow and the picture. It really is yummy, actually, you know, because I was trying to say to them, I said, don't go eat cookies. So I said, I'm going to go eat snow because we had snow, because otherwise I'm going to end up eating cookies. A really beautiful description. How came up with this idea to compare the snow to confectionery and patisserie? It's just beautiful. And sugar crust. What a beautiful imagination you have. Bobby, I'm kind of jealous here in a beautiful way. Really,
I know, eh?
Yes, and then the ending, the rhyming is just perfect. Amazing, really amazing. So beautiful, but you made me hungry, really. The end.
Don't eat the poem.
Yeah. Okay, Naomi, I have your poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay, so this is called Country Winter. The air is crisp and sharp. Fields of pearly satin drift into lost horizons, imprisoned under a quilt of dead, choked quiet. Two mares huddled against the blistering wind that stings the throat beneath bent branches caked in clustered of curdled cream. Curls of foggy gray swirl in snaky snarls from the gaping holes of their quivering nostrils. Their echoing knives pierce the frozen silence. They scream and shake their scraggly manes in fury as a cloud of heavy white falls and bites, melting into dripping icy knives, winding around their necks and down their chilled spine, slicing through shivering flesh and seeping into their aching bones, taking off in a gushing gallop, hooves crunch through crust-covered cold. End poem.
Wow.
Well, beautiful read, so powerfully descriptive, and you can see all this as you describe it. The fields of pearly satin drift into a lost horizon, imprisoned under a blanket of choked quiet. You know, the snow does seem to hush everything down, and, you know, I really like your description of the breath. Curls of foggy gray swirl in snaky snarts from the gaping holes of their quivering nostrils. You can see their breath as it, you know, steams out in that, and that's just beautifully done. Wonderful, right, Naomi? What did you think?
Thank you, Gray.
Tom? You bet.
We go from confectioner's sugar winter to curdled and sour milk, cakes and clusters of curdled cream. This is the kind of piece where by the time you're two-thirds of the way through it, if you're someone like me, you find yourself getting angry about the horses being left out in the snow and not properly barned and wiped down. It strikes me with a certain level of cruelty as you describe this. They scream and shake their scraggly manes in furious cloud of heavy white balls and bites melting into dripping icy knives. I've had to deal in my own way with, you know, people being cruel to animals and stuff like that, man. This is the kind of thing that just strikes to my heart. Your words are stunning. You did a great job of description, and you captured it really well. We'll let it go there.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Thomas. A great comment. And Bobby, what did you think?
Well, like Thomas mentioned about mine, I think this is an excellent counterpoint to mine. It's a very sensory poem. Even the first line, the air is crisp and sharp, and imprisoned under a quilt of dead, choked quiet. I find that interesting because there is actually a science behind winter and snow, and snow actually muffles sound, and it will absorb about 60% of sound on the outside. So when you're out in the snow and it seems like you're swathed in cotton wool or everything's muffled, it really is. So that first stanza is wonderfully creative, and yet scientifically it's also very accurate. I'm kind of with Tom, except I have suspension. I don't have the horses, because if I did, I would get upset also. I have a thing about animals. But your description of their breathing, I find that wonderfully the word picture that you've painted here. I'm looking for curls of foggy gray, swirling in snaky snarls from the gaping holes of their quivering nostrils. That is a great stanza, very beautifully descriptive. This, you've painted an excellent word picture, and the rest of it is just more of the same a word picture of the scene that you have in the picture. I think it's a beautifully done write, very enjoyable read, and exquisitely written.
Thank you, Bobby.
Beautiful job. Thank you for sharing, Naomi. Okay, Sawa, I have your write up.
Can I comment on Naomi quickly?
Oh,
please?
Sure. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah,
sorry.
Really remarkable, Naomi. I feel like I was watching a scene of a movie with your description, truly so detailed. You can hear, we can feel, we can see how the horses are reacted. And I agree, it's kind of brutal sometimes in Mother Nature can be. But you really brought it to life, the incredible. Yeah. Well done. I really
thank you, Salwa.
My pleasure. Okay, let me see. Here we go. Okay. Since suffering, sans souffrance, douleur qui m'a saigné l'aube avait-il mon âme d'éclat lorsque tu t'es endormie dans les gouffres de la tristesse. Peut-être un jour, mon cœur s'élassera au-delà des profondes douceurs. Sans souffrance, je n'aurais pas été qui je suis. Pain, you bled me. Went down, clothed my soul with splendor. If I sleep in this abyss of sadness, perhaps one day my heart will lie beyond the deepest sweetness. Since suffering, I would not have been who I am and the form.
Beautiful read, and congratulations on silver in that contest. Beautiful write, though. You know, it really touches the heart with its openness and its rawness, and I thought it was just beautifully done. What did you think, Naomi?
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, this is beautiful, Sawa. Sans souffrance, je n'aurais pas été qui je suis. You know, without the suffering, I would not be whom I am. You know, it takes a, you know, it's so true. You have words of deep wisdom throughout your beautiful, beautiful piece here. That you have the suffering makes you into who you are. You know, it shapes you. It makes you stronger, makes you more resilient. And, you know, it takes that level of suffering to bring you to a higher and deeper place and have more empathy, I think, for the ones around you even. So I think this is wonderfully written here, Salwa. Very deeply piece here and brilliantly written.
Thank you so much, Naomi. Merci.
You're
welcome.
You,
merci.
And Thomas, what did you think?
Oh, I love this because you're so right. You open up speaking of the pain and of the sweetness. Because it is the strong feeling, both the suffering and our greatest joys, that take the clay of who we are and give it form for all of our intentions, for all of our sense of purpose, and for all of our desires. It is the fires and the bright light of joy that really shape how they will express themselves, and you capture this beautifully.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Great comment, Thomas. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, golly. I'm trying to think exactly what I want to say. Ed. Plus la bonne et la luce plus profonde dans l'ombre. The brighter the light, the deeper the shadows. And this is such an exquisite brevity that you, the title, Sans Suffering, because if you do not suffer the losses, the joys have no sweetness, and you've said it so exquisitely. Sans suffering, I would not have been who I am. That stands alone. That could stand by itself as a micro brevity. Those words. I think this is one of the profoundly emotional pieces you've ever written.
Thank you so much, Bobby.
Yeah, I agree. And would you like to say anything about your rights, Ella?
Oh, it's just life. that's everyone grasps, but you have to find strength and find the beautiful side. Anyway,
yeah.
Even if it's dark, you have to find something joyful. So thank you.
I agree. Thank you, Sala. Okay, so I've got a poem here by Budo. And I'm just going to find his link here. Here we go. I miss out on a lot of the Spanish, but I do get te amo, mi corazón. It means I love you, my heart. And but, you know, it has a beautiful soundtrack to it as well with the guitar work. It's just fabulous. I think Bill said that there was some hint of Carlos in there, and I agree with that. You could definitely feel the Carlos Santana vibe in that song. So I thought it was just wonderful. All right, Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, wow. Like, yo, man, Buddha rocks and raps. This is the first time I heard him, like, kind of like the rapping vibe there to this to him. Yeah, this is just so cool. I mean, you know, he really dug into this and just gave it his all. Gave it his all. I mean, this is just amazing. I just loved it and digged it. Yeah, way to go, Budo. Wow.
Thank you, Naomi. That was a great comment. And Thomas, what are your thoughts?
Well, I can't possibly begin to do better than Naomi's expression of enthusiasm and joy at this. You really... outdid himself and stretched as well as showed a real good sense of how you play both a foreign language and English and mix them together to create a magical, powerful, loving mixture, so that you have a really beautiful musical ballad going on here, with a definite sense of punch and strength to it all the way through. Very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
This was really a departure for Budo. It's usually he's given us ballads, really beautiful ballads. This departure shows a side of him, of his music, another facet that we've never been treated to until now. And I agree. My first thought also was it had a Santana flavor to it. In the way in its presentation and in its hybrid mix of English and Spanish, because that was very very Santana, especially with the guitar work. But I really enjoyed this, and I'm glad that Budo showed us another side of his talent. I hope we get to hear more things like this.
Absolutely. Well said. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, Naomi. Or
can
means,
I?
Sawa, okay. Sorry.
Can
yeah,
I comment,
Sawa,
please?
Would you like to say
sorry.
That? Yes, please.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. I love his talent. I agree with you, all of you. He's just so talented. Amazing how he can do different styles, different. And I wish I could see him live playing. It's incredible. I love the mixture of the two languages. Just give it a different flavor. Absolutely talented. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to, but I had to
no,
comment.
No, okay.
Sorry.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I almost forgot you.
it's okay.
Okay, Naomi, you wouldn't mind reading the next one for me? It's by Daniel Deschino.
Oh, yes, Daniel Deschino, one of my favorites. The Lost Key, The Lost Key. Of what does build the human cage, but the bounty of which we reap? And where is the key but hidden within, buried under years of thought? Thought of gathered knowledge, knowledge of unorganized experience, experience unfiltered through ignorance, ignorance unprotected by innocence, innocence lost in times. Unforgiving, void. What strength does a mere human have of what tools to find the long-lost key? I can resist anything except temptation, so temptation I will eliminate. I can only crave my crave. I can only crave my desires. I can only crave my desires, so I will desire nothing. I can only hate the ones I despise, so I will conquer hate. I can learn to understand all that I comprehend, and I cannot comprehend only what I don't understand. So I will question what I know. And I will first learn to understand the question. And of the lost key, I will learn from regret, and only regret if I have not learned. There is another way out, onward, and poem.
Beautiful read, Naomi. And this is a deeply philosophical piece on life itself and how we live it. I really like the closing where it says, I will learn from regret and only regret if I have not learned. Just a haunting write, but it's a depth. Beautifully penned. Excellent read, Naomi. And Thomas, what did you think?
Sorry,
hello, Thomas. Did we lose you? Yeah, I think we no, we didn't. Hello, Thomas. Are you there? Unmute. Okay, Bobby, what did you think?
It had I'm sorry we didn't get Thomas's comment, because it reminds me of Thomas's writing, and it is deeply philosophical. It actually had, to my impression, it had the flavor almost of Oscar Wilde and his comment about temptation. And he said that, I believe he said, the only way to get rid of a temptation is to yield to it. Resist it and your soul grows sick with longing for the thing it has forbidden to itself. And that's the impression I got from his second stanza, where I can resist anything except temptation. So temptation I will eliminate. I can only crave my desires, so I will desire nothing. And that reminded me, like I said, of Oscar Wilde's comment about the only way to get rid of a temptation is to yield to it. Daniel is telling us that he avoids it by not having it, and which I thought was an interesting kind of a roundabout approach to that same thought. I really enjoyed his philosophy in this. Very interestingly, introspective, and he's shared a lot of a deep thought with us, and I really appreciate the way he's done it. But it's interesting, the ending of The Lost Key: I will learn from regret, and only will regret if I have not learned. I forget what that's called, that phrasing, but I find that the most interesting piece of or part of this is that he's folded it back on itself. I will learn from regret, and only regret if I have not learned. That in itself, again, that could stand on its own as a brevity, because of its deep introspection.
Absolutely, I agree. Thank you, Bobby. Great comment. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here, and this is by Poetic Picasso, and he has a SoundCloud. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to play his SoundCloud.
Whisper a lustful carol, jingle your bells and ruffle your excited wet reef. Come down slowly your chimney tonight and stir it. This sensual Santa Claus is coming to your town. I'll nibble on your sugar plums with the icing of Jack Frost. I'll ignite your deepest desires, lighten up your Christmas tree, heat up your wintry wonderland as you undress my sack of goodies. I'll take you to see the farthest edge of the climactic North Pole. It's the season for you to be jolly, swirling eggnogs and candy canes. You can be my voluptuous vixen while I guide you with my passion. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows in the moon under the tempting winds of our blustering blizzard of kisses. Tonight there is no silent night. I'll make you moan. Oh, holy night. If you have been really naughty, to ride that seductive sleigh. All night after, I take off your sexy stockings and make you shiver. I'll be that unwrapped present laid under the Christmas tree, naked. I'm making a list. I'm checking it twice. I'm gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus, he's coming to town. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. In the poem.
Well, that was a beautiful read, and you know, how enchanting is this poem full of naughty delight. I thought it was just fabulously written, an excellent poem. What did you think, Naomi?
Oh, Santa Claus has never been so sexy and naughty. Oh, my gracious. Ho, 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 for sure. This is amazing lines throughout, Frank. I just love it, you know. Our blustering blizzard of kisses, tempting winds, and you go all through, you know, the seductive sleigh, the ride, and your sexy stockings. Yeah, like other kinds of stockings, I think, that are than those that are laid by the laid out on the chimney. And yeah, this is just, you know, you played on so many words all throughout this, you know, with the icing of Jack Frost, your sugar plums. Yeah, this is just an amazing, brilliant write here, Frank. I just enjoyed it so much. So thank you.
Beautiful comment. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
This tickled me. It really did. Frank has taken all the trappings of Christmas, all the traditional trappings like Jack Frost and the North Pole and eggnog, candy canes, and he's clad them all in fishnet stockings, and just he's made it so provocative. This is like the night before Christmas, the R-rated version. You know, I love his imagination. To be able to take these things and make it seductive is a real is really a rarity and is a rare treat. I mean, I think Frank could take a recipe for apple pie and make it sound provocative, which is a real. It's a gift. It really is to be able to take something and just wrap it and spin it into something really provocative is able to take words and do that is quite a gift. It's a talent, and I love the way he writes.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. Welcome back, Thomas.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like to make a comment on Frank's poem?
Oh yeah, I love Frank. He did a really nice, I want to describe it, rewrite of the Christmas Carol, but he did it with enough subtlety that it teases you as well as enchants, and entices as well as delights. What more could you ask for? Very beautifully done.
Beautiful comment. Thank you, Thomas. And I'd like to welcome area code 912 to the show. Who's calling, please?
This is Kenneth Jenkins from Savannah, Georgia.
Welcome.
Sorry, Kenneth Jenkins?
Right.
And are you in all poetry?
I am a poet.
Okay, do you have a poem on tonight's show?
Sure. I have one that dedicated is in memory of Sidney Poitier, and it's called Black Star.
And is it possible for you to post it into Late Night Poets so we can read along with you?
I don't know. I don't know. This is my first time with you guys.
Okay, but are you a member of Late Night Poets group?
No, I'm just my first time.
Okay. All right, well, you can just go ahead and read then.
Okay. Like I said, this is a memory of Sidney Poitier, Black Star. Have you seen that black star streaking across the sky? So brightly shining up high, burning up the night air sky fog, but finally hitting its mark in that right spot in time. It gives me pleasure to write this rhyme. Giving me pleasure to remember such a black star. Yes, that one who came so far, but so near to our hearts until we can feel what he feels. In every story of every character that seems so real, yes, that black star. His name means wide meadow, like those in foreign lands. So broad with many miles, flush and green and grand. And who would know that this black star would come a long way to conquer a dream, to be who he said he was to us today. Yes, that black star. Remember that. We remember that black star that once streaked across the sky so far to capture our hearts on the silver screen and of life. Yes, that black star in a pool.
Well, that was a beautiful dedication to a wonderful man who had a beautiful career in his life and just did wonders for his community. So thank you for sharing that. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, I think that was an excellent write. And can I have your name again? What was your name?
Kenneth Jenkins.
Okay, well, welcome to Late Night Poets. And yeah, and that was just an excellent, brilliant tribute to that actor there. You call him a black star. Play on the words there with a star, and the star in a movie, and the star through life, and through the sky, and through the universe. And yeah, like Gray said, an amazing tribute, an excellent write, and bravo.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Naomi. And Thomas, what did you think?
It was lovely. It's nice to hear somebody do a poem to Sidney Poitier, because he really did make a large and dynamic difference on both the silver screen and in the hearts of every person who appreciated all that he did, both on screen and off screen. And I thought that the metaphors you used to describe him were strong and vibrant, just as strong and as vibrant as the man himself. Very well done.
Thank you. I wrote it one day.
Nice, yeah. When good works come to us that way sometimes. Okay, so I'm going to post the next poem. And if you wouldn't mind, please, Thomas, when you see it.
Oh, yeah. Be happy to. me just pull it up. Okay. Oh, Jack Tomkovich. Jack Tomkovich. Well, workers pull America upward, not billionaires, shooting themselves into space, giant balls of garbage. Consumer spending is the steam engine that drives the money train. Profits don't trickle down, but stick like honey to greedy, rubby fingers jammed into company pies. Little Jack Horner spit those teeth out. End poem.
Excellent read, Thomas. And in the author's notes, it says, some thoughts on the 1% versus the 99%. Yeah, you know, you can feel the separation in this between the haves and the have-nots, and I thought he did a wonderful job portraying that on the subject of wealth. What did you think, Naomi?
Oh, I think this was an amazing, powerful write, and I just love his reference to Little Jack Horner there, you know. Spit those teeth out. The companies do make their money off of, you know, the way we just consume things. You know, we just buy, you know, and they build things that nowadays last less longer, you know, like the washing machines or whatever, the fridges and the stoves, or, you know, they have like a 5 or 10 year lifespan, you know, and they break down, and, you know, they're so expensive to fix that you just buy another. And that's with everything. It's with all the technology, with everything. And it's just that we're going into this world where we just spend and we buy and buy, and we pollute. That creates more and more pollution. And like he says, giant balls of garbage, you know. And you know, but it's the workers that pull America, you know, that pull the world upward, not the billionaires. And so well stated here. So just bravo, Jack, on this, right? You know, so so deep and so thought provoking.
Well said. Thank you, Naomi. And Kenneth, what did you think? We lost him. Okay, Thomas, what are your thoughts on the poem?
This is definitely Jack Tomkovich, all the way down. But I also love the things he points out. I mean, one of the things I always found amusing when everybody was screaming about raising the minimum wage, if the minimum wage had kept up with the rate of inflation from the time it was first set, the minimum wage would be $20 an hour. So, I mean, you know, he points out very well that we may praise how the strength of America is this middle class, which is also at the same time very amusing because we've done everything in our possible power to destroy it. And he puts it out there really well.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. No, I thought that was a wonderful read and an excellent write. Okay, so I have the next poem up. It's by Colap, and she has a SoundCloud, so I'll play that.
A Winter's Flake of Wisdom by Colap. Each breath a gift, each word a pearl, as new air fills lungs, rejoice in this accomplishment with a murmur, a simple prayer such as a thank you. Even when darkness spills along your path, bathe in it, befriend it, but don't let it forever tar your vision. Know that without it, you couldn't appreciate the light. Inasmuch as after the rain there is sun, learn to endure pain, for the rule of nature is, nothing stays the same. Smell the ions pricking your nostrils, close your eyes, soak up those rare winter days, and welcome with open heart all that falls from the sky, whether sun, rain, wind or snow, it can only help to make you grow. End of poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read, excellent write as well. And I thought it was just a fantastic poem filled with love and, you know, not having, getting what you want. But I really liked it. It was well done. And what did you think, Thomas?
Well, I love her stuff, first of all. I think she's a beautiful poet. This one, the opening line, each breath a gift, each word a pearl, speaks so much to how we are filled by those we love and how much focusing on that love lets us move through the world and do the things we need to do with a great deal of strength and understanding. I just thought it was a really lovely piece.
Thank you so much, Thomas. And did you get to comment on that one, Naomi? I'm sorry, I'm spacing out.
No, not yet. But
okay, would you like?
I second. Pardon me?
No, I was just going to comment, please.
Okay, yeah. I second both of you on this. It's just an amazing write, and that last stanza there, the final stanza is just the amazing. The close your eyes, soak up all those rare winter rays, and welcome with open harp all that falls from the sky. Just a beautiful, deep, poem here, beautifully written. So bravo.
Wonderful comment. And so thank you both for calling in to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. We've only got under 3 minutes now, so I won't bother reading another poem. But much love to you both, and have a wonderful night.
Take care.
Bye. Good night, Gray. Take care. Good night, Tom.
Good night, Naomi. Good night, Thomas.